Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. My guest has actually been on and off the show, as a just coming and hanging with us for many times, but I finally got him on the show to just do a dedicated show about him. My guest is Jeffrey Marshall, and he's an incredible player, great guitar player, and known him for a couple of years, or actually more than that, four or five years. And he's just amazing, and he's got a new he's playing in a couple of bands. He's playing with Bleeding Harps.
Harp.
And
Sorry.
No, that's good. And Lautheiser Band. Anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the other things we do. And one of the things I do want to talk about, because I was really excited when I heard that he went on tour with Alan Parsons, the Alan Parsons Project, for their iRobot 40th anniversary tour, if I'm correct. So anyway, let me get all the mics on here. Welcome. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Anyway, give us a little background. I've never really went into your background, where your influences and your, because I know you teach at Musicians Institute.
I do. Yeah, I've been there for many moons now, like 12 years, I think. But I grew up kind of in the middle of nowhere. My dad played guitar. Mm-hmm. Most of the people in my family played some kind of music or sang, and kind of had an exceptional talent. Like, if you hear some of my dad's sister sing, it's just like ridiculous, you know. So I was always around music, and you know, I never really thought about pursuing it that much. I just kind of started picking up my dad's guitar around the house and stuff like that, and eventually you know, he would sit down and show me some boogie woogie riffs, that kind of stuff, you know. And I just kind of took off from there. And then I heard, you know, guys like Eddie Van Halen and Randy Rhoads and Jimmy Page, and then it was just a downward spiral ever since.
So, other early influences, what were...
Well, besides my dad, the funny thing is you know, like I said, I grew up in a small town. One day I was out shoveling snow, because it was in Upper Michigan, of course, with my dad out shoveling
the UP.
The UP, yeah. And this guy named John Evans came walking by our driveway, and he knew my dad, because my dad was pretty well known in our little area. And he said, "Hey, you're Dave Marshall, aren't you?" He said, "I like to play guitar. Maybe we could get together." And it turned out that guy was fantastic. So I used to go down in the basement. You know, we had the typical wood paneling wet rec room in the basement with the Christmas lights on year-round. We had that for real. For real.
We really did have wood paneling upstairs.
We really had that. And, you know, I used to go down there and bring my boom box, and I would just record them jamming. And then I would go and try to learn some of the stuff this guy did.
Do you still have those tapes?
Maybe in a box somewhere. Yeah,
so cool.
Yeah. And then, so that guy really inspired me. And I had already been playing a few years. And you got to remember, this is, you know, years ago, long before internet and stuff like that. But I was watching TV, and we had three channels. We had ABC, NBC, and PBS, right? The last resort was PBS always. But you always checked it just in case there was something cool on. And one night I was fanning through the channels. I was like, okay, nothing on. Let's check PBS. And I turn it on, and there was this guy playing the most insane guitar I'd ever heard. I'd never heard of him before. I was probably in ninth grade, maybe. And it was Austin City Limits' Stevie Ray Vaughan. Ah. So I went and got a boombox. It turned out that the college that was broadcasting it, when they broadcast some musical event, they would also put on their radio station. So I ran into my room, grabbed my boombox, and I recorded it. So my first early recordings listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan was just a live Austin City Limits. I never heard any of his records or anything like that till later on. But yeah, that blew my face off for sure. I was like another planet there, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So, you know, I had those influences early on. And then, of course, you know, bands like Zeppelin and Rush, Jimi Hendrix, Grand Funk Railroad, all the kind of the 70s guitar-y kind of stuff I was really into, AC/DC, you know, all that typical rock stuff I was into. And, you know, my parents had every record from, like, I don't know, 1955 up until, like, 1970. Mm-hmm. So I, of course, was into the Beatles. I listened to my parents' Beatles records, and my dad had some, you know, Bob Dylan and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So I listened to all that stuff, and I really absorbed it. I loved it. Rolling Stones, you know what I mean? I mean, there really wasn't much to do up where I grew up, trust me. It was it was like, 8 months out of the year, there was snow on the ground. So, you know, just to try to avoid cabin fever, I would just stay in my room and listen to music. And sometimes I would even pretend I was playing, before I even played, I would pretend I was playing along to the records. So I've always, you know, been just in love with music.
When did guys like Malmsteen and Alex Mosse kind of come into the consciousness?
Oh, wow. Well, that's an interesting name. Yeah. After I graduated high school, I was in the service for a few years, and it was actually really fun because I had a band. I was stationed over in Germany. And I met my good friend Billy Bird, who I moved out here with. He was a drummer. He's a great guy. He's probably listening. Hi, Billy. And that was when I first heard Yngwie Malmsteen. And I just thought it was studio tricks, to be honest with you. I was like, who can really play the guitar like that? It's impossible.
But you knew enough to be skeptical. That's great.
Yeah. I was like, nah, they're doing something in the studio. Well, that's what I thought about Van Halen when I first heard Van Halen, too. I was like, come on. That's not possible. That's not physically possible to do that, you know. Of course, you don't, you know, growing up back then, you know, you couldn't just log onto YouTube and have someone show you how to do it. You know what I mean? You had to dig to find out ways of learning how to play techniques, songs, or whatever. And I just didn't have that information, so I just used my ear and just tried to imitate it the best I could. But guys like Malmsteen were just out of my reach. I didn't have the technical abilities to even start on that stuff at first, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I admired him, but I really I was still trying to play Joe Perry licks and stuff like that, you know. So
did you ever study keyboards?
No.
Okay, that because Malmsteen and those guys, that's a lot of those.
Right.
Keyboard based.
And European players just seem to carry that. You know, they're surrounded by classical music. Here it was more of a rock blues thing, but Blackmore,
right.
Malmsteen, Mosse, all those guys have a very strong, they're surrounded by classical music and great classical musicians in a way that is not the same here in the United States.
Oh, yeah, of course. I never listened to classical.
In Germany, you probably got to see a lot interesting bands.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like when you'd read a magazine and it would say, oh, he uses a lot of harmonic minor scale. And I'm like, what is that? You know what I mean? I don't even know what that is, you know, harmonic. So, yeah, I just, that stuff just felt, at the time, felt a little bit out of my league. And I wasn't super into it anyway. I think Malmsteen's amazing. There's a lot of knockoffs that I'm not crazy about. That came out around the same time, but I think Malmsteen himself is—he's got the soul and the fire and all that stuff. It's real. It's really him. You know, it's not him trying to imitate somebody. It's just really him.
He does have a bluesy foundation,
and he can play some blues, of course, and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think he's great. But I wouldn't say he's been a huge influence on me, you know. But it was guys like that and Steve Vai and those guys. You know, this is the formative years for me was the 80s. 70s and the 80s is when I was really, you know, learning how to really play, you know what I mean? Like learning how to get around on the guitar. So
did you ever study or did you just, it's self-taught?
Well, I was self-taught up until I went to MI in 1988, I went there.
Oh, okay. Well, if you were following your dad's footsteps and you do have some of the finger-picking chops, who were the guys then? Would have been like Doc Watson or?
No, actually the guy that I was really turned on to for the fingerstyle stuff was a guy named Leo Kottke.
Yes.
Who played like a 12-string. I don't know if you ever tried to play 12-string fingerstyle. First of all, I can't even play 12-string at all. It doesn't even work for me, you know. But
like Vaseline, machine gun, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he would, you know, he's playing all these like complicated 12-string finger style things, and I couldn't do it, but it inspired me to, you know, do that, you know. And I started out with finger picks. I started out with a thumb pick, kind of like a banjo player would. I actually started.
Well, people can see it in the audience. His finger, he's got the fingernails on the third and fourth.
Yeah, after I kind of got bit by the rock bug, I started picking up more of the pick and learning that way. But these always kind of just fell into place. You know what I mean? They were always kind of in the background. And I could still do all those little, like, all that kind of stuff that I was doing with my mm-hmm. finger style. I was like, oh, cool.
Such an important foundation. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm lucky, I guess, because I know I do have students that ask me about that, and I can see them struggling to do that. And to me, it's really natural, so I don't even think about it. But and then, of course, you know, one of the good things about MI is that not only, you know, you get to teach and see all kinds of great students and everything, but you get to steal from other teachers. And there's a lot of great players there. And I think it was a guy named Jamie Finley. I don't think he's there anymore, but he's a fingerstyle god, you know. And he is real meticulous about his nails. And he was telling me, this is before I started getting these done, he's like, I just go to a salon, you know, and have them do select nails that I need. So I started doing that, and it took me a few tries to get them to kind of shape it the way I wanted to. But now that's what I do every couple of weeks. I just go to the.
Do they wear out that much, or?
Yeah, they grow out. You know, they kind of grow out, and you got to keep filing them and stuff like that. And then eventually they'll break. So they last about 2 weeks.
About two weeks.
But it's like $5, you know, to go get it.
Yeah, and also too, you're playing on electric, right, most of the time.
Yeah.
Bronze wound.
Yeah, if I
kills
was,
your
yeah,
nails.
Yeah, that'd be a different story for yeah. sure. Yeah, but that technique just translated from just when I was a kid when I was first learning and I never really thought about it. I just started doing it, you know, out of necessity. So
well, one of the things that he does that's really cool is when he plays, he'll bend two notes like almost to unison, but he pulls it out and he gets like this ring. You can show
like
us.
So
he gets like a ring modulator type of effect.
Yeah.
No, get some more gain. You'll hear the overtones.
Yeah. It's like kind of like a. Yeah, it's kind of coming from that country sound a little bit. You know what I mean?
But when he mixes the two, it actually goes to another note.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like we were talking on the one of the tunes there. I did that. If you do that with one of those octave. Fuzz pedals, it just goes haywire on you. Like, you never know what's going to happen, right? Most times it's cool, but sometimes it's not. But usually if you kind of do something like that where you hit two notes at the same time and kind of bend them out of tune a little mm-hmm. bit, the thing just goes crazy. And I love that because you get this unexpected, like, craziness.
What just happened?
Madness, yeah, for a little bit. Yes. How do I recover from that? You know?
Well, let me play a clip. I'm going to play... Live to Ride,
mm-hmm.
and what I noticed on here is how you answer the vocals, like you, which is an art in itself. And I've talked to other guests on the show about that, because like the singer will sing, and then you do something, and
it actually is me singing on that tune.
It is you.
It's
okay,
the only so tune I sing lead vocal on.
A good
song.
Pick, Jeff.
Yeah.
Well played.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's interesting how he does that and how he answers, because the answer is so tasty. And then it goes into the lead. So let me play this clip. And this is from the Bleeding Harp album, Truth. And I'm going to flash the album so everybody can see it. And let me find it here. Here it is. Okay, here's Live to Write. Take a listen. And then we'll talk a little more about what you're doing.
Rise to live.
Now, there's a really, that's a great kind of a Hendrix-y feel, but he took it in a different direction. But it's just really tasty what you're doing behind your,
awesome,
your
thanks,
voice.
Man. Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that clip. What were you using on
well,
that?
Actually, I recorded that a couple of years ago. That's not a new track, actually. I was using a Telecaster, which I have at home. That's all
really?
Telecaster front pickup. Yeah, it's not a Strat. And I was using a BB preamp as my gain. Mm-hmm. And I was using a PV Classic 50 head that I have in my garage.
Oh, very
you know,
cool.
Just experimenting. And I had a speaker cabinet in my closet and just doing all that, just moving mics around and just getting certain sounds. And I was really kind of looking for that kind of Robin Trowery little bit thing going on, Hendrix thing, you know. And I think I found it pretty well, even though it's not like some, you know, vintage Marshall or something like that. If you've never tried that BB preamp pedal, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Those
amps do have that kind of Marshall tone. That's Steve Pfister's. He loves those amps.
I'll tell you, I've used that amp in the 90s. I used it for years as my main amp. And I have some videos that I've watched. I'm going, wow, I was actually getting a killer tone out of that.
Yeah.
A few pedals here and there, you know what I mean? But yeah.
I'm going to put in my request now for you to write the book called The Art of the Front Pickup.
Yeah.
The Art of the Neck Pickup. Because it kind of seems to have come back in vogue. You know, it's like in the 80s was a lot of synth pop and very clean stuff. And then when Guns N' Roses came and Sunset Strip came, it was very Les Paul and humbucker. And grunge, you could kind of go either way, but mostly it was a front pickup or middle pickup thing.
Right, right.
And it seems like as YouTube has come around and a lot of younger players have looked backwards, they've really keyed in on the front pickup, on rhythm playing, on the Hendrix approach, on the Stevie Ray approach. So it's interesting because now I'm seeing a lot of younger people that really know and understand that tone. But you started it very early on and always got great sound.
Yeah, ultimately that came from Stevie Ray. I mean, that, like I said, that first concert that I recorded to him, not only was the playing amazing, it was just a sound that was like, it was just godlike, you know. And it still is. It's still, I just watched
Well,
the
Hendrix,
concert.
Too, used
Hendrix,
that pickup a lot more than people realize.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I know the bend you're talking about is one of these kind of like, that kind of thing, right? That's the... And then, you know, if you vibrato is like the most important thing on earth, right? So, you know, if you really listen to like Hendrix vibrato, like when he does this kind of wide vibrato and, you know, with a certain tempo to it, it's quintessential Hendrix. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm kind of trying to conjure a little bit of that the best I can.
Oh, man, to any young people listening, soak it up and write it, because not as a teacher, but there are so many notated ways to attack a note. There was some culture, I remember reading, there's a lot of different vibratos that you can use, and all of them are different expressive. Santana does not sound like B.B. King. B.B. King doesn't sound like Hendrix. Hendrix doesn't
it's
sound like
fingerprint.
Stevie Ray.
It's your fingerprint.
It's an absolute fingerprint, and when you're really good, as Jeff is, you can vary it a little bit to get different effects, and that's really where the personality of playing comes in, apart from bending in tune, which is the first thing we tell people, bend in tune.
Well, besides doing that wiggle, which actually Clapton does that too, you do a really tasty bend up, and then you go up above.
Here's that lick, if I can remember it. That's the lick, I think. Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I've just, you know, I've always been turned on by vibrato and bending like mad. One of my favorite guitar solos, I play this for my students all the time. They probably look at me like I'm crazy or something. But it's called Train Caperolin. That's it. It's on Aerosmith, Get Your Wings, I think. Mm-hmm, it's the opening track. And at the time, I thought it was Joe Perry, but I think it's Steve Hunter.
It's Hunter. It's Steve Hunter.
All this time, I'm thinking Joe Perry's God. And he is, don't get me wrong. But, you know,
so
40 years later, I think maybe it was JP or somebody told me, oh, no, that's Steve Hunter. I'm like, ugh. That just crushed my whole youth.
Well, show us the lick.
Which one?
The one you show your students.
I'd have to listen to that solo again, but that was one of those. Yeah, it's like. Thank you. had that quintessential triplet thing, you know, that Jimmy Page does all the time and stuff like that. Had to have that in there. But it's just that, just the kind of the vibe that, you know, I can't even do it. It's just so cool. If you hear it, it's just one of those solos. Like my record player was worn out listening to that.
If everybody out there, if you like Steve Hunter, the definitive lead that he wrote was the on Lou Reed's Rock and Roll Animal.
Oh, okay.
That whole opening to Sweet Jane is.
Oh, right.
That
on.
Is
okay.
Just a classic.
Not only did he turn me on to that, Jeff himself, when I was probably in seventh or eighth grade, but from Steve Hunter himself, he said, I've listened to a lot of bands cover it and nobody's gotten it right. So if you're a young band out there, want to give that a try, record it and send it to Steve and he'll tell you whether you get it right because no one has yet.
Yes, but it's all that. Those bends and everything, yeah, it's just 100% taste.
It's the bends, and they're, you know, harmonically, of course, now I've been studying for years and I'm, you know all kinds of weird stuff, but that still turns me on. It's simple, you know what I mean? The bends and the notes are right in the right
place. Tasty.
The tone, you just can't beat that. You know what I mean? You can't
Absolutely.
Beat
it.
Yeah. Well, let me play another clip.
Okay.
And this is kind of cool. This reminded me some stuff from very 70s. Where they were a lot of double leads. And this is called Something You Never Had. Oh, and there's double leads in the fills around the vocals again. And then there's a short lead on here. But it's really cool because in the 70s, we do that a lot. We would, because we didn't have like orchestra in session. So we would do a lot of double leads to kind of flesh it out. But what he does is just really tasting. Now, did you just do those yourself?
No, that's me and Coleman.
You did them together.
I went over to Jeff's house one day and we were like, let's write something for this. And I think that was probably we recorded it that day.
By the way, for those people listening at home, Bleeding Harp consists of?
Well, of course, myself, Paul Vallis,
who's tremendous the singer harmonica player.
Yes.
Jeff Coleman.
Great
Kevin Chown,
Lau
Tizer on organ. Lau's been playing a lot of B3 lately. Sounds amazing. Lately, we've been using Andy Sinisi on drums.
Great.
Fantastic.
Drummer.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. And, you know, the thing is about Bleeding Harp is we kind of think of it as not just like just this band. We have a core thing, but it's kind of a more of a community. Like JP's played with us before.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the band tours with other people and stuff like that. So, you know, we kind of keep it going and we just do like local gigs and stuff like that just to kind of keep it out and keep it fresh. And if somebody's not around, I'll call JP or I'll call a different drummer or something like that. And, you know, it'll be a little bit different, but in a good way because everybody's really talented. You know?
Yeah. What's cool about it, you guys are playing all these people. When you come back together, you bring all of this in there and it makes the next performance even more unique and magical.
It's awesome.
So, no. And then also, too, Coleman, was he playing the wah on that last clip? There's a wah in the background.
Yes. Yeah. On his rhythm track, he's playing wah. So I think if you listen to the whole CD, Coleman's on the left and I'm on the right. And then most of the times the solos are too. So you'll know it's Jeff because he's on that side and I'm on this side. I tried to, you know, I mixed a lot of it and Rick Ferracci mixed some of it and stuff. But I tried to make it organic like that, like almost like if you were coming to see us, this is what it's going to sound like. And even most of the time when someone's taking a solo, there's not another rhythm track there. It's like his rhythm drops out and now he's playing a solo.
Mm-hmm.
With a few exceptions. I think maybe there's the Live to Ride, I wanted to make it pretty beefy, so I kind of added in another layer of guitar there. But for the most of it, if you really listen to it, the guitar, if someone takes a solo, the rhythm drops out. It's just like if you're hearing us live, you know what I mean? That was kind of the goal of it, is to keep it organic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it sounded great. I love the wah-wah work, too. That's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, here's Something You Never Had.
My friends all ask me why I don't get mad. had to really lose.
That last lead was...
That's Jeff.
Yeah.
Interesting. The other Jeff, yeah.
And he's using a... I think he's using a chorus on there, right?
I don't know.
He gets like a weird... He's got, and it's in and out. It goes away.
He's got a really cool studio in his house where he's got like this other room with like all... like three different 412 cabinets from different years and everything, you know, and all kinds of microphones. So, yeah, he always gets just like a crushing tone, you know. So he actually sent me two different solos, and he said, just pick the one you like the best. They both were great, you know.
Uh-huh.
So the other one was a little cleaner, and it was maybe a little jazzier, and I was like, let's keep it a little more rocking, you know. But all the harmony stuff in there.
That was just cool.
And it's funny you mention that, because we were totally like, let's do the Eagles, you know.
Yeah,
let's do the Eagles here.
I'm hearing like Imaginary Lover.
Yeah.
That's what I heard toward the end.
Yeah, there's a, you know, that's where we were drawing that from. It's like, and if you listen to it, for the most part, when those harmony guitars are going on, there's no other guitars. It's like I said, we're trying to make it so it's like, that's what you're going to see when you come see us or whatever.
I know this is all about guitar, but Lau killed on that song too.
Yeah, I love Lau's solo at the end of that. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you're hearing Eagles, but I'm hearing Charlie Daniels, Outlaws. I mean, there's
a bunch
of those guys were doing those. But it's kind of cool where you take it. You harmonically go, you stretch a little more. Like you do these leaps, like a ninth leap.
Well, we're playing through chord changes that are jazzy. Do you know what I mean? So it's like a... And then... So all the harmony lines are kind of based around those chord changes. So you do hear just...
And then just before the lead came in, you're doing these low double parts, which are really cool. You don't that was very Eagle-ish. You did the trills, but then you were doing like legato notes down. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, yeah. Again, just going around the chords. And there is one other overdub guitar in there kind of as a lead that I'm doing. So, yeah, it's definitely now trying to keep it interesting.
What did you use on that one? On those double leads, did you use a different setup or?
Yeah, everything is with a different setup. Every song is a different setup for this record, for sure. I want to say that I did it over at Jeff's place, so we just mic'd up some of his stuff because we basically wrote it and said, okay, let's lay it down, and that's how it ended up.
So, which guitar did you use?
I'm trying to think.
Was that the Tele or a Strat?
I think.
And were you using?
No, that was a Strat. I have a green Strat that has a low output humbucker on it. Gets a real kind of nice hollowy kind of sound.
But were you using the humbucker or were you using the neck pick?
On the harmony parts, I was doing this. That setting there, that kind of in between.
Yeah, that's between the first and the middle pickup, the bridge.
And then on the fills, I was using a humbucker on the bridge. You know what I mean? That's where you hear
that. Oh, really?
Yeah, so like you hear that like... That little lick there is all. That's a humbucker, actually. It's a low output, like EMG humbucker I got from a friend of mine. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, it sounds great.
Great tone.
And Lawler's doing the low winding imperials.
Yeah,
as well.
it's actually really similar to a low
output thing that's happening.
Yeah, I love it. I love it because
it's really expressive.
And it matches up. Like I'm obviously, and this is more traditional, but most of my Strats have humbuckers in them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm scared of this pickup right here. Actually, this is the only Strat that I've owned where I like that pickup. it's just got that real quacky, but it's not so top-endy. Usually, I have to roll the treble way down on that, and this one I don't do anything.
That's, you know, awesome.
I mean? Yeah, it's
got a great sound. And what pickups are those?
These are David Allen pickups. Mm-hmm. And the story behind this guitar is, well, when I first started working with Iconic here, that a buddy of mine, Prashant Aswani, I don't know if you know him or not, he's a great guitar player and very prolific guy and really cool cat. Anyway, he called me up one day and he said, hey, I got a friend that needs some guitar videos. And he was endorsed by somebody else. And I can't do it. Would you be willing to just come over and do some videos for me? I said, yeah, sure, of course. You know, so I go over there, and it was the guy from Iconic. And he had this guitar there, and I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And so, you know, I did some demos and stuff, and he had, all of his guitars were great. But this one right here just spoke to me, you know. And so as I was leaving the room, I had to cut out. I just grabbed the guitar, and I was like, okay, I'll see you guys later. And he was like, you can take it. We'll work something out. So, yeah, so... I love this guitar. It's just like the best, you know, old school Strat that I've had, that I've certainly ever owned.
It sounds like one of the 60s.
Yeah. I just wanted the people to be able to see this other one because they're both Iconics.
Yeah, that one I just had built. Now, of course, this guitar is awesome, but it's not like it can't quite do all the things I would need it to do for every
gig I play. Is that a B-style neck? Is that a 9-inch radius or is that a flatter neck?
Well, this is flatter. It's compound radius. He's got some really cool things. He's got a compound radius that's actually 7.25 to 9.5.
Okay, because it looks like near the nut, it looks like it's pretty curved.
It's a little rounder here. Yeah. But here's the thing: is I didn't like it because it would fret out on me.
Yeah, that's the problem with it.
So he replaced it, and I swear to God, you cannot tell the difference the way it feels. It feels like the same neck, except for now this is, I think, 9 to 12. It's a little flatter.
Yeah.
So it's still round here.
So it's like a B style in the front, and then it goes down to the C.
Right. And another thing is this is an asymmetrical neck, which is what Stevie Ray used to use. And I, when I first picked it up, I said, is this asymmetrical neck? He's like, you're the first guy that's ever noticed that. He's like, yeah. Like,
which means the bump is...
It's a little chunkier on the top.
Yeah, here. Off the top.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, it's kind of chunky anyway, but I don't know. It just feels
That's great. A critical spot. One of the Buzzy Featon mentioned that on his, when he makes the neck, that can make or break the guitar, that angle of that, the top.
Yeah, I mean, you can feel it if I told you. If I didn't tell you, you wouldn't probably notice it, but, you know, when you pick it up, you go, oh, yeah, you're right. It does have a little bit of variation there. But, yeah, I really love it. It's not... you know, it's definitely great for blues and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. When I first got with them, you know, he was asking me if I was going to take it on the Parsons tour. And I was like, I don't think I can get the sounds out of it I need for that tour. Because, you know, they've got some pretty rocking stuff. Not that this guitar doesn't rock, but I definitely felt like I needed a humbucker to do everything for that gig. So I took a different guitar. And then he was like, okay, well, let's build you one then. And then that's where this came from.
So did you use that one on the Parsons?
No, I didn't have it then. This has been built afterwards. I used another Strat that actually looks just like it. I built this one based off of that one.
Well, let's talk real quick, because I want to get into the amp a little bit.
Yeah,
but let's talk about the Parsons. How was that gig? Tell us a little bit about that.
It was fantastic. I mean, you know, of course it's epic classic music, and it's a little surreal to be actually playing it. Like, well, I'm actually playing Eye in the Sky right now. You know? It's a little surreal. Yeah, we've all heard that song a billion times. You know, it's a great tune. You know, aside from the music, of course, everything was just great. You know, Alan's great. He's a super classy guy. His wife, Lisa, they take care of everything. It's fantastic. The guys are great.
How strict was he in terms of getting... Did you have to emulate the album pretty exact? Or?
No, actually... I went up to his house before a couple of weeks before we actually went, and I didn't quite have all the songs down just yet. You know, I was still kind of chipping away at them. Or I had the songs down, but I didn't have all the solos down. You know, and some of those solos are classic. You know, like, I can't remember it. You know, the Wouldn't Want to Be Like You and stuff like that. And so I was playing it for him, and I go, I don't quite have it perfect yet, but I'll have it by the time. He's like, oh, just do your thing. It's cool. You know, I was like, oh, wow. You know, he's actually not too, as long as it feels good and it matches the mood of the tune, he's actually pretty loose on it. So, like on Eye in the Sky, that's another, to me, that's another classic solo that you can almost sing if you've heard the song enough, you know what I mean? So I wanted to learn that one, at least for the most part, pretty dead on. And then that tune stretches, so after I play the written solo, then it kind of just stretches into, and I never quite nailed it. I never felt like I really nailed it. It was little variations that I do that I put in there every now and then. And I remember the last show that we played, and that on that song, we're standing face to face. We're in the front of the stage. It's, you know, the last song I played before the encore and everything. And I'm playing. I'm just looking right at him playing it, and he leans over, and he said, "Almost perfect." So I got an almost perfect from Alan Parsons. I'll take it.
What was the toughest one? Was that the toughest one to do?
No.
Were there any ones that caused you problems or that you thought were...
Well, there was one tune of his called Prime Time, which I'm sure you're familiar with. I actually sang it. And so when it goes into the chorus, and it's there was a gonna be my turn tonight. It's pretty high.
Yeah.
And I can hit it about 80% of the time, but I didn't want to do 80% in Alan Parsons. So we gave it to Todd, who would normally sings it anyway. And so he would just take that line. But there's a lot of, you know, that song that starts off, it goes like, it's all that melody in there and everything. And then it just comes right in on the vocals and you're changing patches. You know, I'm trying to change patches and I'm trying to play that thing note for note. You know what I mean? So there's a little tap dancing and then I got to sing with some kind of emotion. So that tune was probably the most challenging tune for me personally, because I had to sing it and play it all that.
Yeah,
all
well, he parts. Layers so many different guitars and different tones. So now you were using the Kemper, so you had to switch around a lot.
Yeah, actually that was, considering all the different sounds that you have to get, it's actually a really good option for something like that, because you can, it's all pre-programmed, you know, I got my clean sounds and my lead sounds, and I don't have to do a ton of tap dancing, you know, a little bit here and there.
Well, when he was working with you on the songs, did he tell you what they were using and what how they got the tone so that you could kind of, he just said go
no,
for it?
No, no, no. That was the thing. He's actually really laid back. I mean, you know, I was up at his house and he said, we went over the tunes and he's like, oh, hey, I'm building a new studio. So we took a walk down there and he showed me his studio and then we had lunch and he's super laid back. You know, I mean, there was a couple times when, you know, of course he's Alan Parsons, so he's got Alan Parsons ears, right? And there was one song I was playing a C minor seventh chord on. And, you know, we can hear everything in your ears. You're all wearing in your monitors. And we're at sound check, and he was like, what chord is that you're playing? And I said, C minor seven. I think it's right. He's like, just play C minor. Like, which is like one note different, right? Like, he's like, yeah. I go, okay. Wow, he's listening.
Yeah.
He's listening. So, and he's got those ears. Yeah, he's got those ears.
But other than that, you had a lot of freedom to do.
Yeah. Like in Prime Time, I got as long as I wanted the solo, basically. You know, like at the end of it, was just and I was trading with the keyboard player, Tom Brooks, who's awesome. And yeah, it was just basically, you know, that was kind of my tune to shine. But he never said, you have to play this like this or like that or whatever. I just kind of, just out of respect for the music. And plus it was an anniversary tour. I wanted to play this stuff pretty close with a little bit of my own flair. You know what I mean? I don't want to completely copy it, but.
So when they did, it was the 40th anniversary for iRobot, right?
Right.
So when they did they do Day After Day?
Yeah. So we did the whole record down.
Who did the pedal steel parts?
I did it on a slide. With a slide guitar. Cool. I put like a lot of delay on, and then I would just do swells. You know, I did all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, because that's a very, it's very interesting what he had the guy do, because it's very non-standard pedal steel stuff that he was doing in there.
Right.
But you posted a video while you were on tour. I remember you shared one on your page with and you were doing Games People Play. That was cool.
That's a really fun song to play.
For the record, because he's probably not going to say it himself, Jeffrey's a fantastic slide player. Really is a great, great slide player. In addition to the other stuff he does, he's absorbed so many different guitar players and styles. And I have no doubt you did a fantastic job.
That was really the only tune I played slide on, though. I think that had any legitimate.
I wanted to get it in since you mentioned
but the
it.
Type of slide playing, it's totally.
It's different. It's not like Dwayne.
It's not
Greg
blues
Allman
at all. He's doing these little high parts, little melodic things that are.
Yeah,
going on.
Then there was some, like, even all the little. Effecty stuff that's on that record in between songs, we did that mm-hmm. stuff too, you know, and so some of it would be just me just doing weird sounds and echoes, like whaley sounds, you know, like kind of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And while that's going on, you can just see this light show going bananas around you. You know, you just kind of going, "Wow, this is cool." <You know?
laughs> No,
yeah, it was fun. It was,
that Games People Play was a great live clip of you playing.
Well, the thing is, you know, I brought a little camera with me, and I recorded every show, and some of them came out better than others, of course, but I remember watching the first show for the first time, I was like, oh my God, that's what's going on stage, because it's an unbelievable light show going on behind you, and I'm just trying to get through the tunes and do a good job, I'm kind of not paying much attention to that. But then when I saw the footage back, I was like, oh, my God, like there's screens going on and there's all kinds of, you know, graphics and mm-hmm. super cool show. It was just really great to be a part of it. I really, really had a good time.
Yeah, no, he's great. I'm a big fan. I've always been a big fan. But anyway, we're almost out of time. But I want to do is play a clip from the other band that you play for.
Oh, from Lausband.
Lautizer. And... I'm going to play, these are short clips. I'm going to play both of them because they feature some interesting things. First one I'm going to play is Pride in the Name of Love.
Cool.
And this is from Songs from the Swing House.
Yeah.
That album. And this one you're sharing a lead solo with, if I'm pronouncing this right, Chiellini Minucci.
Yeah, excellent guitar player.
And this album was recorded live in the studio.
So yeah, this is live. These takes are live.
Just boom.
All right, take
when
a
you
listen.
Watch the video. This is what you get right
take
here.
Take a listen. My mistake, I missed and misclicked. They're right next to each other. So hold on a second here. That clip of that lead, that's Truth from the Bleeding Harp album. But check this out. Okay, here it is. This is the Pride, Name, and Love. I'm sorry. Now, I'm going to go ahead real quick and play this other clip, Ramble On, which is the Led Zeppelin song, but you're trading off leads with violinist Karen Briggs. So I'm going to play that real quick, and then we'll talk about what you were using and stuff.
Thank you.
So what were you using on that first clip?
Well, that whole session I used a Kemper on it.
That's the Kemper?
The Kemper, yeah.
And which guitar?
A Les Paul.
Oh, wow.
A Les Paul Classic, yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, it was like nine people in the studio, and there were it's a video, too. It's a DVD CD package, so you can watch us performing the song live. So it just made sense to not have loud amps in the room just to keep everything under control. So I don't think that, I don't know if Chielli, I don't think he's using an amp in it either. I think he's using some kind of a modeler thing. You know,
God,
what I mean?
Great tone.
But yeah, it's crazy. I mean that stuff is just crazy nowadays.
Both of you guys are, you know, it works. I mean, you guys are perfectly matched there. It's real aggressive, both parts, and it works really good.
Yeah.
But I heard in the earlier when it's not in the clip that I played on Ramble On, there sounded like there was a section. Was that strings or was that
keys? There is a string section there, yeah.
There is a string section live. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm like,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, three violins and a cello, I believe. Don't quote me on
wow,
that.
Wow, that's pretty full. It sounds really...
I'm telling you, it was an epic project. They had, you know, Kerry Frank was on B3. Of course, Lau was on piano and Rhodes and synthesizer thing, whatever you call it. Chielli was there
amazing
playing
musician.
Acoustic. Yeah, Rick Fibracci.
Rick, yeah.
Gene Coy. Mnyongo Jackson.
Coy.
It was
Mnyongo,
like, and we're at Conway
and
Studios.
Karen.
It was just, and Karen, yeah. I don't know if you ever heard Karen Brinks, but.
She's crazy great.
Yes. She's so no, good. She's killer.
And Tita sings her butt off.
Yeah,
Tita sings
yeah.
so
You guys
wonderful.
Play at the Baked Potato sometimes, right?
Yeah, we did our CD release party there
yeah.
A
I was
couple
there.
Months ago.
I
yeah,
think,
it was
I there?
Great. I
no,
think so.
I was there at something last
You're
year.
You're there in spirit.
You've been to so many CD parties.
Oh,
I'm amazed you even remember.
Well, I produce a lot of CD release
yeah,
parties.
No,
so.
I know. You are the person for that.
Duly noted.
But anyway, I don't have the other album from Lau, but this is Bleeding Heart. Definitely get this album. It's really good. There's great guitar work all through it. It's really... guitar candy, ear candy for you. I mean, and just tasty stuff, really tasty.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't want to like go bananas and make it some crazy fusion record, and we didn't want to go make it a chops fest. You know, we didn't want to make it tasty and appropriate, but still ballsy and rocking. You know what I mean? And I just should add that I had recently met Doug Pinnick from King's X a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. We have some mutual friends, and started, you know, became friends with him, and hey, you want to do a song? Sure, let's figure out something to do. And so just the stars aligned, and we went in the studio and cut a cover of Whipping Post, which is on the record with
yes.
Doug, and it's live in the studio again.
It's murderous. I just heard it on the way over.
I mean,
so awesome.
Doug Pinnick is
and
one
Doug
of my
is,
favorite Pinnick voices of all time.
Yeah, God.
It's just
wow.
ridiculous.
And a nice man.
And he's going to be
very
out
nice.
Thursday.
Oh.
He's going to come out and sit in with us, and he's going to do
well. Well, let's talk about that real quick. Yeah. First of all, www.jeffreymarshallmusic.com.
Spell it.
Jefferey.
Yes.
And so where are you playing? Where can people
we're playing
see?
Playing Ireland's 32.
That's which band?
That's Bleeding Heart.
That's Ireland's, a regular gig.
It's a regular
much,
gig. Yeah. We play there every month. We've been doing it for years.
Good food.
Trust
good
it's always there.
It's good pub grub
good hang.
And
mm-hmm.
good beer
low
and everything.
Stress.
And, you know, yes. we've been doing that gig for years. And like I said, we have other players that come in and stuff. But, you know, of course, I asked Doug if he could come out, seeing how it was a CD release. And he's going to do that. And as fate would have it, he just released a Hendrix tribute. So we're going to do a couple of Hendrix tunes with him on Bubbles,
too. Very, very, very cool.
Yeah. And I invited a few other friends out. I don't want to mention too much because I don't know if they're for sure going to make it or not. Mm-hmm. But there should be hopefully some other friends coming
out.
Any
other gigs with Lau?
I just did a gig on Friday or
Beautiful
Saturday.
Carlsbad.
Carlsbad, yeah, down by
the
San
festival
Diego.
Festival or...?
Yeah, it was their city festival or something like that. It was a great show. And I just did a couple of gigs with him, and sure, I have more on the books.
But that band travels everywhere. I mean,
The thing is, Lau, you know, Lau's got anywhere from a three-piece to a nine-piece band, depending on the gig or whatever it is. You know what I mean? So, yeah, and usually if it's a bigger concert, it'll have at least, you know, like Karen on it or Eric or Steve that also plays sax and stuff. So
Eric Marienthal.
I mean, I'm not greasing any palms here, but just playing with Rick and Gene Coy as a rhythm section is an experience in itself. Those guys
That's
are
very,
so
very
cool.
Very cool.
Yeah,
very
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's fantastic.
Now, JP is in Incendio, of course, incendiomusic.com and CarbeAndDuran.com. Anything going up right real quick?
We are intersecting with the world of Lao once again. Actually, our band's playing Rancho Cucamonga tomorrow and then Albuquerque Biopark on Thursday with our pal, Carrie Frank, who is also on Songs from the Swing House. Then Friday, we're in Colorado Springs, and then like maniacs, we come back to beautiful Palmdale, straight from Colorado, to open for the Lao Tizer Group. We're going to be at the Palmdale Amphitheater, and Lao's group is going to be the larger configuration with Kieli Minucci from Special Effects on guitar, Eric Marienthal on sax, and Karen Briggs on violin, in addition to all the other great people, Mungyungo, Tita, Rick Fiorach is going to be really cool. And then we're back in Denver at the Levitt Pavilion in Denver on Sunday, and then East Coast and another week after that. So we're busy, but it's going to be really, really cool to play with Lao and all our pals there, and I'm so, so sorry we're missing the Bleeding Harp CD release, because it's going to be fantastic. So we'll be there in spirit from
Albuquerque. Yeah, I was hoping you could come out and sit in and have some fun with us. But I will say this. I've played with Incendio. They've been gracious enough to allow me to come in and sub from time to time, and it's so much fun. If you haven't seen them or gotten any of their music, go check them out, because they're outstanding
definitely.
Guitar playing. Outstanding, like ridiculous.
Thank you, my friends. A blessing to
and
play with you.
Lori, what's going on? Anything you want to announce?
Sure. So here's the week. We've got our friend Steve Pfister's band back at the Baked Potato on Wednesday. We love Steve. He comes here to be a guest and also the host.
He'll have his PV amp.
All right.
Wednesday.
Love to hear you guys play
with
together.
Sandro Feliciano on percussion. And Philip Bino on bass. Great trio.
Yes,
great trio. Thursday, you guys are playing late, right, on Thursday?
Yeah.
Because we have a show at Bogey's with Robbie Dupree.
Ah.
And that's going to be cool. I helped to promote a show for him last year. So he'll be back on Thursday. And then Sunday, we've got our double bill at Bogey's with actor-singer Rob Morrow's band, which is a great blues band, together with my dear friend Gary Stockdale, and I get to sing in his band. So that's going to be a lot of fun Sunday.
Very cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you, Lori. Jeffrey, thank you.
Thanks
always.
For having me.
Dude. JP,
thank you so
it's
much.
Always good
thank
to
you,
see
Lori.
You. Doug hanging with us. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah. Good to see you, Doug.
I'm going to let these guys take us out, and everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.